This recording is a sampler of five snippets of oral history interviews from the CD Memories Forged in Market Bosworth. The MP3 CD, of duration 8 hours, is available to purchase at most Market Bosworth retail shops, or phone Mrs. G. Oakley at 01455 290 348. This is Reg Berry, speaking of memories of the wartime and the Bosworth Park Infirmary.
In 1939, and in January 1940, I'd just passed the age of 20, and I was conscripted. Because I wore spectacles, I wasn't A1. And if you weren't A1, they put you in a non-combatant unit. I was put in Royal Army Medical Corps. The sad part about that is that the other two people that were called up that same day never came back. That was from France, from Dunkirk.
Were you involved then with the Dunkirk withdrawal in 1940?
Yes, sir. At the end, actually, that we got out.
So you're on the beaches, were you?
Well, jokingly, Lord Gorton and I said, well, I think we've had enough, we've been here long enough, we'll go home. But it wasn't a joke at the time, but you didn't know what was happening. You were 20 years old and you just did as you were told, sort of thing.
There would have been some horrifying incidents on the beach.
We were constantly being attacked by these Stuka bombers, dive bombing, yeah. But there were very soft sands at Dunkirk, and the bombs weren't what they are today, so a bomb could drop 20, 30 yards away and you wouldn't be injured, you see. Which is marvellous, really.
Did you see any escape injury then due to the soft sand?
Yes, a friend of mine was... It couldn't have been many yards away. What we would call the promenade today, there was a horse and cart, carrier cart, like we used to have carrying hay and straw in this country, and a bomb dropped near to him and blew him over this cart. You can't believe it. And all he suffered was some loose teeth. The sand was so soft. It was quite a remarkable thing. And he couldn't have been above 20 or 30 yards from me at the time. But we were very lucky. And we left France about 3 o'clock one morning, came over on a fishing trawler, landed at Ramsgate. Anyone would have thought the war was over the way we were welcomed home with the Red Cross and I don't know whether the Women's Institute then or anybody anyway. Marvellous it was, really. It really was. And that's it. The remarkable thing was how unsettled you were in your mind. You wanted to be moving all the time and it was a general thing. People who were demobbed from the war couldn't settle. They'd been moving about probably for the last 5 or 6 years, and they were very difficult to get used to civilian life again.
At Easter 1949, the rector and members of St. Peter's Church Council wrote to Friends of the Church in a letter entitled An Appeal for Appeal. Experts had examined the present bells and advised if ringing continued, a collapse might occur. This is John Enzer.
In 1950, 3 new bells were added to the 5 existing ones in St. Peter's Church, which had been taken down for the restoration and then rehung as part of the World War II memorial to local people who had lost their lives. I remember my father, who was in charge of the removal of the bells from the bell tower to be taken to Taylor's Bell Foundry in Loughborough. My father and fellow workers from H. Beckinson's removed the louvered windows on the north side of the tower and then rigged up a winch from ground level to a high up in the bell tower. The winch was unwound and my father stood 80 feet up in the opening direction operations with absolutely no health and safety regulations involved. I understand that 3 new bells were added at the time.
This is Marjorie Vero speaking on nursing at the BPI.
48 hours a week. 1 week you had 1.5 days and the next week you had 2 days. So it worked out like that. But when you was on nights, you had a 3-night and a 2-night. 1 week you'd have 3 nights off and 1 week you'd have 2 nights off. And sometimes it used to go over that you worked 9 nights to only get 2 off. I didn't like nights. And at that particular time, you know, if you worked on the convalescent ward, it was your duty to go and call the nurses in the morning at 6:30. And at that time, there hadn't any street lights. Yeah, and then you had to go down to the dower house and walk all down there, all on your own, not any lights, and unlock the door, ready for when the night nurses came off duty. That was one as I didn't like, especially because I always used to be on nights in the winter, and you'd got to go down there all on your own, by the churchyard, down to the dower house. That was one duty I didn't like. I remember we got one of these old ladies. I was doing my training at the time, and I was working over on the children's ward, and the junior nurse, during nights, had to go and help on Agnes' ward. You see, help them, because you didn't wake the children up till 6:30, so you'd got from 4 o'clock till 6:30, you'd got to go and help on Agnes' ward. And this old lady said, "I don't know," she said, "there's somebody been walking through this ward all night, dragging their leg." Well, they always used to say that the great lady dragged the leg. And then I'd got to walk across from the mansion over to the block. And she frightened me, she really did. When I went out that front door and I'd got to go over, because you were on your own and it was dark, I flew. She really upset me.
This is Olive Hicklin speaking of her childhood and life in the town and area.
Oh yes, there's 9 of us. Yes, 9, I've got 4 brothers and 5 girls. I would like to tell you how we spent our night. We used to sit round the fire and then we'd sing. My dad would say, "Now who's going to start off?" We'd got the wireless and it had got an accumulator. And my dad used to have it on for the news and the weather. And when that had gone, it went off. And I remember as well, the wake came to a farm opposite, just down the road. And this girl, Mervyn the name was, she must have been about 9. And she said to Mum, "Could she take us down to the fair?" Anyway, Mum let her take us, the two of them, sister and I. And we're walking round and we looked at the boats, everything's so pretty. And there was this box. And I remember standing, looking at these walls in this box. They were all pretty colours. And I don't know whether I was picked up, whether I walked there or what happened, but the next thing I remember, I'm sitting in this caravan and I haven't got any shoes and socks off. I don't remember them taking my shoes and socks off. And I'm sitting there and this woman came towards me and she got this little pretty plate. And I could see that there were 4 potatoes, and there were new potatoes, and I could see that they were cold. I knew they were cold, and I'd never had cold potatoes. And I didn't want these cold potatoes. And she was trying so hard to push them onto me that I started to cry, you see. And I said I wanted to go. Well, I didn't know where my shoes and socks were. But the next thing, of course, I started to scream then. Well, apparently, Madge and Mervyn had looked for me, couldn't find me, and so they went home thinking I'd gone back home without them, which I would not have done. And my dad had come home from work, and she had to tell him that, and my dad went down, and apparently he didn't bother going looking around the fair. He went straight down to where the caravans were, and he could hear me crying, and he came in and piggybacked me home. I didn't have my shoes and socks.
What sort of things did you have if it was your birthday or Christmas?
I never remember having anything for my birthday. No. Never ever had a birthday cake, anything like that. But at Christmas, we'd have a bag with apple, orange, and a new penny, and sweets, and you'd have one toy.
This is Robert Taylor, previous landlord of the Red Lion, speaking on his memories of the licensed trade.
Well, I was actually born in Hinckley. Then we spent about 4 years in Burbage. It was in a railway carriage down Workhouse Lane that we lived in. Converted, of course. It was not got the seats in or anything. And then we moved to Hinckley Road, Burbage, into a bungalow. And we were there until we came over to Bosworth.
Why did you and your family move to Market Bosworth area?
Well, Dad was a motor mechanic and he was out in all sorts of weather. I think my mother decided to be warmer and cosier in a pub, you know. I don't think she realised how much work was entailed to it, though. Because he was lame, he'd got a polio-style leg, and so he couldn't rush around or anything, so...
Getting back to Hoskins now.
Yeah.
You were there then when the campaign for real ale started.
Oh, yeah.
So did it make a big change to you?
Yes, it did. A lot of the locals, to be honest, didn't like Hoskins beer. I sold more draft Guinness than anybody in the county, I think. It was funny, one Saturday lunchtime, a crowd of these guys came in and they had the beer. Oh, they loved it, smashing. And said they got to go to a meeting in Runeaton in the afternoon. And that's when they formed Camra. I mean, I saw something written where it was formed in Wales or somewhere, but it wasn't. Take it from me, it was formed in Nuneaton, because they came back on the Sunday morning and took 2 o'clock, I think. Had a load of them drinking beer like there's no tomorrow's. Because they were all from Manchester area, I think, the ones that came in to us. They presented me with the first edition. I wish I'd got it now, because it was just sheets of paper. And I suppose there was 20 or 30 pubs in it, of which we were one. And we were in it, well, till I left, anyway. All the ones that formed it, they were quite knowledgeable. It did a good thing, actually, because when they formed that, you had a job to find any beer like us.
Tommy Dixon had to test drive a car, didn't he?
Yeah, he got a racing car on a trailer. And his mechanics were there. He didn't drink, but evidently they'd been racing at Silverstone the week before. And to go to Mallory, they have to change the gearbox or something like that. But he'd done that, but they hadn't had a chance to test it. So I said, I should like to test it before I went up to the track. It's the only way quieter can go, right? Because obviously it's not road taxed. Also, I said, yeah, turn down here. Go straight down through the villages, go through Carlton, Barton, up to as far as Snaiston, right at the end, then turn around and come back. Well, he said, I'm not too sure of that. He said, you want to come with me? Show me the way. Well, I said, I don't know. What time are you going? About 4 or 5 in the morning. It was summertime, you know, light in the morning. I said, yeah, all right. And then we got outside and they got this flipping thing off the trailer and wouldn't start. So they didn't know more. They just took all the plugs out and replaced them and off it went. But it was a two-way road at that time down here. And he's sitting at the end there and he's flipping, revving up. Well, it must have been bouncing around the square because no silencer on it or anything. And off we shot. Well, he'd got an helmet and visor, but he hadn't got a spare. And the windscreen was 3 inches high. Because every time I looked up, my eyes filled with water. I couldn't see a thing, so I was... And it's the quickest trip I've ever had to Snaiston and back in my life. And the most hilarious. He obviously could drive the thing, you know. You know, after you go through Barton, you go down and there's that...
Really sharp end.
Went around the second bit. And there was an old Morris Minor coming the other way. I don't know how I missed it. You must have frightened him to death. But I'll tell you, it was only minutes all the way to Snareson and back. And I said, thank you very much for that. And I never saw a thing most of the way there or back. The only time I looked up was when this miner was there. Oh, but...